Hello, and thank you for joining us today for Grant County Coronavirus Update. I'm your co-host, Andrea Warner, and today I'm joined by two staff members from Guadalupe Montessori School right here in Silver City. And they are Martha Egnall, the director, and Heidi Pendleton, the director of student wellness and nutrition. Thank you both for joining us today.
You're welcome. We're glad to be here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Martha, as director, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Montessori School?
Sure, happy to. So the Guadalupe Montessori School is a private nonprofit school that serves toddlers through sixth grade. And we receive a couple different kinds of funding. We accept subsidies from the CYFD for working families and families who where the parents are in school, as well as have two classes in the mixed age pre-K program. We also have families that are tuition paying, you know, as well. So our youngest students are 18 months and our oldest students are in sixth grade. And we, like everybody else, had to shut down in mid-March when everything shut down so quickly. And we're not able to get back to regular school last spring, but did open in April of 2020 for essential childcare, childcare for the children of essential workers. And then ran a modified summer program and opened in the fall with our, I would say regular academic program, but it really is a modified academic program because we pivoted to doing outdoor education over our summer and then into our fall.
Did the classrooms look any different?
Yeah. During COVID times, yes, the classrooms looked very different. So when we started with our essential childcare soon after the beginning of the pandemic, we had to shift into stable pods. And at that time, the Montessori model is already a mixed age model, but we even expanded that so that we could keep siblings together. And we had very small groups with stable staff. And that was kind of what our essential childcare looked like. And at that time, we were restricted to only serving the children of essential workers. Over time, there was some relaxing of those restrictions. And so in the summer, we kept the same pod model, larger mixed age groups, pod model, and were able to accept children from the community whose families were just felt comfortable with them being in a program that was mostly outdoors. And so that was our enrichment summer program, which is always a little bit different from our school year. I think our biggest shift happened in preparation for opening in the fall. And that is when we went full on into building our outdoor environment so that we could accommodate the same traditional Montessori age grouping. So our toddlers are 18 months to three. Our primary class, which is our pre-K class as well, goes from ages 3 to 6. And then our elementary is a mixed age 6 to 12 or first through sixth grade group. And so what we did in preparation for the fall was create outdoor environments for each of our classrooms where the children really spend most of their day outside. We still use the facilities inside, you know, if they need to use the restroom, wash hands. And we've had a few extreme weather moments with lightning or other times when we've had to bring the children inside. But for the most part, the children are outdoors all day under shaded canopies. We've now built and put outdoor heaters in some of our outdoor environments. But it's a huge change from what our school normally looks like.
And talk to us about some of the COVID protocols that were put into place along with the outdoor classrooms.
Do you want me to answer that one, Martha?
I think that's a great one for our Director of Student Wellness and Nutrition.
So we have strict protocols and they really haven't changed since the beginning of the pandemic. And it's social distancing and spatial awareness and mask wearing. And we are in allowed to do that more efficiently with outdoor environments. But one of the things that became really apparent when we were training the staff at the beginning of the school year was that if we modeled wearing our masks really well and not touching the front of the mask and keeping well-fitting masks on the face so that you don't have to adjust them, the children would follow suit. And it's really apparent that that worked. The children in all the classes amazingly wear masks all day long, apart from taking them off to eat and drink, which they also do outside. And they're incredibly effective at mask wearing. They don't complain about the mask wearing, and they were just grateful to be back to school after many months of school being closed. And so the other piece is the social distancing. The older age groups, elementary class, we were able to give them lessons of grace and courtesy about social distancing and what 6 feet looks like. And they have a greater understanding. We also spread all of our desks and eating spaces so that students and staff could socially distance during their work periods and also whilst they were eating meals. We very early on in the pandemic decided that people could not sit inside and eat meals because it just didn't seem to make any sense having all these mask wearing and social distancing protocols in place and then sitting down with your mask off to eat. So everyone still eats outside, even old staff do. The only people that are exempt from that are the toddler classrooms who come in when it's really cold.
And the only thing I would add to that, which I think everybody is doing who's doing any kind of in-person school, is our daily screening. So when people arrive every day, we do temperature checks, and then there's a series of questions that we ask families about any symptoms or fever-reducing medications, as well as contact with positive COVID cases or out-of-state travel. So we have screening questions that kind of model the state regulations around when you're supposed to isolate yourself. And it's resulted also in, you know, some more stringent or intense health restrictions than we might usually. I mean, it's never good practice to send your child or to come to school yourself as a member if you're not feeling well. And I think that in general, we have had to kind of tighten those expectations up. So and just err on the side of caution for both children and for staff. And then, of course, there's any symptoms that look like they could be COVID then have to be treated with a little more seriousness. We've had staff who have had to wait until they have a negative COVID test to come back to work. So that's another piece. And then, of course, part of the early childhood department's expectations are that any school or any early childhood center in a county that's red or yellow, we have to do surveillance testing. So every staff member at GMS is testing every 2 weeks for COVID.
And how did you conduct those tests? Was it something that happened at school or they'd go in to test?
Right. So, there are a few places to get tested around town. We recommend that people use the Department of Health testing, which is available on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, or use HMS has kind of a testing clinic as well. In the fall, the state of New Mexico started piloting the Vault at-home saliva tests. And we at Guadalupe Montessori signed up to be part of that pilot testing program. So our staff, if they weren't comfortable with it for whatever reason, they're welcome to keep testing at the DOH or at HMS. But we signed up and received codes that allow you to order the tests through Vault, but specifically connected to an early childhood center. And so several of our staff chose that option. And I think have found it really convenient and easy. And now that pilot program has actually been opened up, so all of New Mexicans have access to free at-home saliva testing through Vault. What's really great about these at-home tests is you sign up, they get delivered to your door. You have to log on Zoom, so you do them yourself, but you don't just do them without anybody watching. You have to log on to the Vault website and be supervised while you're doing your saliva collection, but then you send it back off through UPS and the results come back really quickly. And they're also very reliable, where some rapid response tests, there's some issues or questions at least about reliability. The Vault tests are showing to be as accurate as the PCR nasal swabs. So I've found them to be a really excellent resource and a big help for that surveillance testing.
And I'd like to add that I still actually do the nasal swab at the Department of Health. So we've got each spectrum being used by our staff members.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been following all of the protocols so closely, mask wearing, I'm sure lots of hand washing and regular testing. How effective would you say these protocols have been at stopping the spread or keeping it out of the school? Did you see any virus in the school?
I would say that we have seen a massive reduction in any spread of any virus this school year. We've really had a non-existent flu season. And there's been very little illness amongst the students and staff due to the mask wearing. And we have not so far had an outbreak of COVID-19 in the school. There have been a few positive cases over the holidays, which didn't develop from the school, which we are required to track and make sure that all the quarantine protocols are adhered to. So it's been incredibly effective. We also do deeply clean all of our spaces as well. So we're really covering all the bases that we can, and the staff in each classroom space, even though they're outdoors, do very rigorous sanitizing routines at the end of each day and whilst class is in session, as well as supervising the hand washing. And that is something that you just have to stay on top of just during regular school without the pandemic. It's very helpful to do the hand washing piece.
Yeah, I've been in your kitchen, Heidi. I know about the hand washing. And it's hard to, you can't get away without it.
Well, my kitchen is closed to anyone apart from the people that cook in there. And I do really miss having interaction with the students who would come in and get their plates and utensils and stuff for lunch. And so that is one thing that we all really miss in the kitchen, is that we've had to close it off to any outside people that want to come in. So I'm looking forward to that changing when we see the end of this pandemic, whenever that might be.
Well, along with those protocols we mentioned, I know now also that vaccinations are available. Have you had any experience or any staff been able to get vaccinated yet?
Yep.
Yes.
We've been able to work with the local kind of network of healthcare providers to connect our frontline staff members with available vaccine appointments. And so at this point, nobody has received their second vaccine yet. The first round of people to get vaccinated will get their boosters tomorrow. And then we had a kind of a second round of people who will get them in another week or so. I couldn't tell you the exact numbers. I think probably about 75% of our staff will be partially or fully vaccinated within the next couple weeks. And at this time, it's not going to change any of our protocols. We are certainly feeling optimistic. It's kind of that sense of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. But because of the pace with which all of this has been developed and rolled out, the current best practices or public health recommendations are that we don't change any protocols after we have vaccines. And until that changes, until they have evidence, you know, that talks about how, you know, whether vaccinated people can be carriers unknowingly and those other pieces, because vaccines are not approved for children, obviously. So it's really just the adults in the classroom who would have that protection. So we are starting to work on kind of gating criteria for what would need to be in place for us to make a stronger move towards moving back inside. But at this point, that fresh air and that ventilation and having the kids be outside is just so critical to our capacity to keep this virus at bay. And it feels, as much as we're all just eager to return to some sense of normalcy, the time is not now to throw away the progress that we've made. And so while it's been, I mean, every center, every early childhood center, every school is really working hard. You know, everybody who's doing anything in person is doing a lot. But a lot of our colleagues are having to deal with positive cases and shutdowns, and that disruption of having to start and stop because of positive cases popping up is really, really hard on the whole community. And so our hope is that by making these, you know, these sacrifices and making these shifts, that we'll be able to maximize the amount of in-person school that we can offer to our community at this time.
Yeah, I drove through the parking lot today, and it's a beautiful, warm, sunny day, and I saw students outside enjoying the sunshine. But I also noticed that there was a snowman that hadn't quite melted yet. And I know we had a pretty big snow, and the snowman tells me that there were some students on campus. What does it look like during outdoor schooling during a snowstorm?
Well, we had some snow days last week. Now, it's not like we were there as we were getting 9 inches of snow. So, and to be fair, even had our program been inside, there would have been snow days last week because we just got an epic blizzard. But we did pull it back together, and we got back to school on Thursday and Friday last week. And we've been communicating with our families all along that this really, you know, this is what we're doing. So we've encouraged them to make sure that they've got appropriate gear. The teachers plan for snow dancing and other, you know, physical activities to keep the kids warm. We stock up on hand warmers and have all kinds of extra jackets and hats and gloves and boots. We make warm tea for the kids when it's really, you know, super freezing. And so, you know, all of the guides did an amazing job integrating the snow into what they were teaching, snow painting and fort building and snowman building. And it was a lot of fun. I think if we lived, you know, we're really so lucky to live in a climate like we have here in Silver City. And I think it makes this possible in ways that it may not be if we lived in, you know, Wisconsin or Minnesota or somewhere where there was just feet of snow and ice and sub-zero temperatures all the time. I mean, we do have these cold spells, and they're not the most comfortable. Families can always keep their kids home. The kids are developing a tremendous amount of just grit and toughness, you know, during this time. And we're doing everything we can. We've got tents with outdoor heaters, you know, for our primary classes. And as Heidi mentioned, you know, our most vulnerable people are our toddlers, our 18-month to 3-year-olds. And they have a north-facing yard, which is very shady and stays cold and snowy longer than other places. And, you know, those guys have been going inside with more frequency because it's not appropriate to expect very, very small children to stay outside that much. And they nap.
And the toddlers are napping inside. That's what I was wondering. I know there's a nap time. And so is there anything put in place inside to keep a cleaner environment?
Yes. I could answer that question. So we have the advantage of having, all the rooms inside the school have a big wall of windows. And so we do have the ability to open windows for each learning environment, but we also bought medical grade HEPA fans that are small enough to filter out the coronavirus. And it also cleans the air, repetitively during the day. And so we've just done the best we can. We also have fans and just trying to keep air circulating and fresh air coming in and having those HEPA fans running when anyone's present in the classroom, but also running after people have left for the day. And obviously the staff in the classrooms that are not toddlers are wearing masks the whole time, and they actually still step out to eat even if the toddlers are eating in their classrooms. And so that's what we've been focusing on to try and maintain the air quality and prevent the spread of the coronavirus in the toddler classroom. All other age groups are still required to follow the protocols of three-year-olds and above, and that's just mask wearing and hand washing and all that good stuff. But they also have HEPA fans, and we also open windows if people need to go in and get anything out of the classroom or use the restrooms or something like that.
HEPA, medical grade HEPA filters. Tense, how many students are at the school right now?
I think we're about 37 or 38. So we're about half of our normal capacity. We've had a lot of families just kind of choose to ride out this pandemic at home. And we're serving pretty young children. So it's not an unusual time to have kids at home anyway.
I'm just thinking about tents to have all those students under, and outdoor heating. None of that sounds cheap. It sounds quite like there's been quite a bit of money put into being able to create this. And I know that you're a private nonprofit school, and so you're not receiving the same public, the same funding that the public schools are getting. And I'm just wondering, how is the school doing financially with all of this, these protocols put in place so that the kids can be there on campus?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for asking. I feel like this is the perfect time to do a big shout out to Carissa Guild, who is our, she does the finances and has kind of stepped into a facilities role at the school as well. And she has just been going after grants and, you know, all kind, there's funding that has become available because of this pandemic. And she is amazing at seeking out opportunities and, you know, and putting in those applications. We applied early on for a PPP loan that kind of helped us get through the spring and the summer, or at least part of the summer. So the answer to that question is kind of, there's a couple layers to it. First of all, we're doing everything we can to kind of bring in the resources that we can to help us do what we can do. We're able to get access some of the CARES funding through the, as a private school, the PED, you know, it's not tremendous amounts of money, but we are able to get some help with cleaning and things. And we're finding a way to make it work. And we have an amazing, you know, community that supported us for over 40 years. So it's certainly not easy. You know, it's hit getting the kind of reduction in enrollment along with these increased costs is definitely a hit for the school. So so we rely on our resourcefulness, on grant writing, on different funding sources that we can get, and then also from people who choose to support us, you know, financially with donations.
I'm so grateful for all the work you're doing and making a, I know that the Montessori has always offered an alternative education in our community, and even through the pandemic, you've really given children opportunity to be together and to be outdoors in a distinctive learning environment. What if there are any listeners today who might like to help support your programs? How could they do that?
Great. You know, they can go to our website. We are GuadalupeMontessori.org, and it's a little, it's strange. I'll just spell it GuadalupeMontessori.org. And there's a place that you can make a donation right on our front page. I believe also if you go to our Facebook page, if you just search Guadalupe Montessori School, it should pop up. Facebook has a way of working with nonprofits so that people can donate through Facebook as well. And if you feel more comfortable doing donations of cash or checks, if you don't like, you know, donating with credit cards or debit cards online, you can find our address on our website. And you're certainly more than welcome to mail us a check. It would be deeply appreciated.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today coming up in your community or with the school?
I know that there's a lot of, you know, just eagerness to get kids back in school, and I can certainly kind of relate. I mean, I think it is so important for kids to be able to be together. I would just say, let's get teachers vaccinated, and you know, we're all exhausted and tired of this pandemic, but it's not time to throw in the towel. Like, we've got some more, you know, some more months of these protocols of the masking and the hand washing and the social distancing and the not gathering, you know, with people outside your household. All those things make a huge difference. So I would just say to everybody listening, just hold strong. There's light at the end of the tunnel, but it's not time to give up yet.
Martha and Heidi, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experiences. I can tell that it's just been a tremendous amount of work that the Guadalupe Montessori School has put into keeping the school open and going through this incredibly difficult time. Thank you so much for what you offer our community and to the children of our community.
Thank you. Yeah, big shout out to the teachers and to the guides and the staff at GMS. We certainly are here to support them, and it's been a heavy lift for everyone. But to the people that are outside with the kids all day, every day, we just have to add a little shout out and some gratitude, because it's a lot of work. It's a labor of love, and they do it with a lot of grace.
Thank you, Andrea, for having us.
Thank you both. You have been listening to Grant County Coronavirus Update. And again, I'm your co-host, Andrea Warner. I'd like to thank Marcus Hansen, our editor and co-producer. And thank you all for tuning in today. Stay safe and stay healthy.